It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, a statewide competition is putting out the call for the best burger recipe in Wisconsin. On Food Friday, we'll talk with one of the judges and get tips on cooking up the perfect burger. First, there are two official election reviews related to the 2020 election happening here in Wisconsin, one led by Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, another launched by Republicans via the state's Legislative Audit Bureau. To make things a bit more confusing, there are also unofficial election reviews being done by third parties that are not affiliated with the state government. This all mirrors what's happening in other parts of the country. GOP politicians at the state, local, and county levels are launching investigations back into the 2020 election as former President Trump continues to make baseless claims that the election was fraudulent or rigged. We're learning about these election reviews, official and unofficial, here in the state. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you see a need for these reviews, more reviews of the 2020 election? Do you think taxpayers should foot the bill? If so, if you're against these reviews, what are your thoughts? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Patrick Marley is a state government and politics reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Patrick, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Well, let's start with these official reviews or audits of the 2020 election in Wisconsin. There's a couple. First, there's this audit of election procedures by the State Legislative Audit Bureau. I think that got called for back earlier this year. Can you tell us what that review is about?
Yeah, so this is a review by the Legislative Audit Bureau, which is considered by both Republicans and Democrats as kind of a gold standard agency, professionals that have been auditing all types of state government for many decades. They've been asked to go in and talk to clerks, look at how they conduct things both in 2020 and at other times. The 2020 procedures were a little bit different because of the COVID pandemic, and then they'll issue a report or a series of reports this year that lawmakers can look at and decide if they want to change any election laws because of that.
And this is not, if I'm understanding it correctly, Patrick, a thing where they're pulling out ballots and reviewing them one at a time or anything like that. Do I have that right?
That's right. I talked to the Sun Prairie clerk. She is one of the places that the auditors went. I don't know how many places. She said that they were particularly interested in things like absentee ballots where there was missing information on addresses. That was an issue that was raised. They were interested in what are called remade ballots. So that's, let's say somebody sends in their ballot by absentee, and instead of filling in the ovals like they're supposed to, they circle the candidates. Well, it's clear what the voter intended to do, but the voting machine can't read that. And so then they have a procedure where poll workers from both parties look at the original ballot and they create a new ballot. They keep records of both so that anybody can review them afterward. Those were the types of things that the auditors wanted to look at.
And then there's this investigation that was created by Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, hiring a few investigators. What are they looking at, and who's involved in doing this?
So this is the speaker hired Michael Gableman, the former justice on the state Supreme Court, and two former police officers or people in law enforcement, and is in the process of hiring a third. The mission for this group is a little more vague. Voss says that he wants them to look into what he calls irregularities. I think basically tips that they've received from the public, questions raised by lawmakers. They will spend the next couple of months looking at and writing some kind of report on what that means. Again, with the purpose of drafting legislation that could change some of Wisconsin's election laws.
Now, you mentioned the Legislative Audit Bureau, pretty well respected by both parties, seen as impartial arbiter as you can get. How about this crew that's been hired to do this investigation?
Yeah, this is a very different situation. The Democrats in the legislature are extremely skeptical of it. Gableman is someone who's elected with support from Republicans when he's on the Supreme Court. One of the former police officers involved is Michael Sandvik. He has been involved with Republican politics. He wrote a report on the 2004 election in Milwaukee that was very controversial, that was disavowed by the police department after it came out and some prosecutors. And so that has gotten the concerns of Democrats that this is not going to be a fair review of the election.
Talking to Patrick Marley from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about election reviews here in Wisconsin. And Patrick, you've been reporting lately on another thread that I had no idea, I'll be honest, was going on, an independent effort to get a look at a lot of ballots. Who's doing this, first of all?
Well, there's a guy named Peter Berniger who is involved, another guy named Gary Waite. They're just citizens in Wisconsin who have filed many open records requests. In a couple of cases, they've visited clerk's office to scan copies of ballots on their own. They say they have about 2 million ballot images. So most of these are gathered through the open records law from clerks. And they are doing some kind of analysis of that. They're trying to get all or most all of the ballots in the state to come up with their own report on what they think happened in the election.
And this is something that citizens can do. You can go and or you can make requests for these ballots or the opportunity to scan them yourself.
Yes. I mean, ballots are public records, just like many other records. Now, clerks are pretty picky about handling them. So if you want to go in and look at the ballots, I think you'll find many clerks would allow you to observe them, but would not allow you to touch them. Chain of custody is very important with election records. But, you know, it's a longstanding belief that these records should be public. You want to know that the results can be reviewed independently, that you can, you know, make sure that the ballots were counted the proper way. This review is going to be controversial. One of the men involved, Berniger, he does have a criminal conviction for mail fraud and bank fraud. That has got Democrats saying that, you know, this kind of review should not be trusted because of his history.
And we've got a question from a listener wondering who's paying for these. Now, the independent review, I assume they have to pay for themselves. But the Legislative Audit Bureau one, the investigation started by Assembly Speaker Voss. Where does the money come from for those?
Yeah, those two latter investigations are paid for by taxpayers. Now, the Legislative Audit Bureau has a continuing budget, always funded by taxpayers. It wouldn't really see any significant increased costs for reviewing this. It's just every legislative session they're given, you know, different tasks. They're given several audits, more than several a dozen or two. So, you know, they might look at the University of Wisconsin one year. They might look at the Department of Workforce Development another year. This time they're looking at elections. So that's not really an increased cost to the taxpayers. The investigators and the former Supreme Court justice are being paid by taxpayers. That's you know, tens of thousands of dollars that will be spent on that effort. And then the private investigation by these six or so individuals, that's being funded by themselves. That does not seem to be a terribly expensive effort. They're spending, you know, a few hundred dollars here and there for public records.
Let's bring on a caller now. Dennis is with us in Two Rivers. Dennis, hi.
Hi, Rob. As much as the Republicans claim they want to do what's lawful, I'm sure they would not be complaining, they would not be investigating if Trump would have won.
Dennis, thanks for the call. Patrick, and that kind of brings us to the core of the controversy of these ongoing reviews like this. Can you talk a little bit of the political back and forth about why they're happening?
Sure. I mean, first of all, I think it's important to know that there have been a number of reviews already of the election, all of which have upheld that Joe Biden narrowly won Wisconsin. There were recounts in Milwaukee and Dane County. Those were made at the request of Donald Trump. Those are the most liberal parts of the state. Biden actually gained votes in those reviews. The recounts were taken to court. The state Supreme Court upheld the findings that the recounts were conducted properly, that the election was held properly. There were a lot of other lawsuits, I think, in all, including the recount lawsuits. There were seven of them. In all cases, the state won. The election was found to be valid. That's by a court that's got a majority of members that was elected with the support of conservatives. It includes a Trump-appointed federal judge. So there have been a lot of reviews, and they've all been in favor of how the election was conducted. It's also good to remember that 2016 was also an extremely close election. It just happened to go the other way. Trump narrowly won the state in 2016. He narrowly lost in 2020. There's been a lot more scrutiny from Republicans of this election result versus the one 4 years earlier that was equally close.
Thanks for the call, Dennis. And Patrick, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
That's Patrick Marley, state government and politics reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He joined us to talk about official and unofficial election reviews going on in Wisconsin. In just a minute, we'll talk to Dane County Clerk Scott McDonald about what election info is publicly available and what it means when somebody decides to conduct this kind of election review. You could join in with your thoughts or questions at 800-642-1234. We'll pick up that conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation now about election reviews in Wisconsin, including unofficial ad hoc reviews that aren't affiliated with the state government. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Dane County Clerk Scott McDonald joins us now. Scott, welcome to Central Time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, as I mentioned, talking to Patrick Marley a few moments ago, I didn't know that citizens could make requests to get a look at even scans of ballots in some cases. What is accessible to the public?
Yeah, I mean, we're under federal law, actually, for the presidential elections, need to keep all of the election material, including the ballots, for 22 months. And, yeah, requests can be made to view the ballots. We've had a few in Dane County already. Most of the machines, the election scanners around the state, actually make a digital image of the ballots, and often that's what people are asking for. And on the Dane County website, anyone can go and look at the digital images of the ballots for any of the elections the last several years, including November.
Have you seen an unusual amount of interest in the November 2020 election materials compared to past elections you've worked on?
Yeah, that's an understatement. We've been kind of overwhelmed with open record requests for different items. So, actually having a recount in Dane County was helpful in some ways, in that we were able to scan a lot of the material from that election, including, you know, some of the inspector statements and other things that go along with an election. And so when we get future requests, we already have it on file and are able to email it out.
Now, some people might hear this and worry, thinking, wait a minute, I cast an anonymous ballot. How can I know that people can't look at a ballot and attach it to me somehow?
Right. Yeah, there's nothing that links the image or even the ballot to an individual. So there's no way to tie it back to somebody.
And as we heard from Patrick Marley, clerks are generally pretty careful about who they allow to handle the original physical ballots. Could you talk about the kind of care you all take of those original documents?
Yeah, it's very important to protect the integrity of the ballots and anything else that goes along with it. For example, the absentee envelopes. That you wouldn't want someone to have fill in an oval or make a mark on it. So, you know, clerks handle it themselves, allow people to view it. And then maintain that chain of custody, because, you know, once you lose that control of that, then really none of it's worth anything. So it's really critical to preserve everything in the state that it was at the day of the election.
Now, in this private effort to review the election, there's a lawsuit filed against your colleague in Door County, the clerk there, trying to get copies of certain election documents. That case, I think, still not ruled on. Where would legal questions arise over what, who can access what, when?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little complicated. Some of the requests that have been made are for example, I have an open records request from the same individual wanting to look at server files, wanting to look at what came through the router. I think some of that goes back to the MyPillow guy saying that there was hacks and fraud with no evidence of that. But we really can't, reveal some of the data that could end up compromising our system. So, one of the points we make is that you can see the outcome by being able to count all the ballot images. We had a recount. You can match it up against election night results and the results we had. So, you know, it is a little frustrating for clerks, when you have these lies running around that people make things up and it's hard to keep up with them. People tend to believe what they want to believe.
Yeah, for people who are worried based on what they've heard, either from a political leader or on social media or whatever, what do you tell people to try to reassure them about the integrity of our voting system, not just in November, but in general?
Yeah, I mean, and this really, not much has changed from 2016. There was one of the previous callers mentioned, you know, it had to do with Trump winning. In some ways, it's true in the sense that a lot of people were concerned. Did Trump really win Wisconsin in 2016? And you know, we tell people that yeah, there's a great deal of security and integrity to the system. And some of the things that people don't understand, for example, is that there has to be a signature in a poll book for every ballot. You know, they're like, oh, some ballots were snuck in or put in. It's like, well, that doesn't work that way. Number two, you know, we clerks assume that there's failure at every point. So we don't assume things went well. We check everything, and there's ways of doing that. So, for example, when we get results on election night, I don't assume that is correct. I'm able to check it against the tapes that I get from clerks the next morning. And in fact, they're checking the results on the election site to make sure they're accurate. So there's many, many checks and balances all through the system. We never assume that what we have in front of us is correct until we're able to verify it.
One concern we've heard from Republicans in particular isn't so much about the integrity of votes, but some of the efforts made in response to COVID. I'm thinking of drop boxes and the voting in the park in Madison in your county. What do you say to those concerns?
Well, you know, the way you handle concerns like that is you take them to court. You know, there are gray areas of the law, you know, it is. All of us had to deal with how we're going to handle COVID and stay safe and still be able to vote or go to work or do anything. So, I mean, one of the things the Supreme Court said to the Trump campaign is when the drop boxes were installed, you could have come to court and objected to it. You didn't. You waited until you saw whether you won or lost, and then you brought it to court. That's the problem. And then they reaffirmed that the different, you know, things like filling in the city and the state envelope, if you can verify the address, was proper. So that's how you handle it. You go to court, and then you abide by a court's decision. And that, you know, apparently wasn't good enough for the Trump campaign and some Republicans, but that's how it works.
In just our last minutes, are there lessons learned from dealing with an election during COVID that you will apply in future years?
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I think voters are much more sophisticated and understanding how the system works. I mean, one thing that we've seen a big increase in use is the state's My Vote system. It's a great online portal that the Election Commission runs. You can see what's on your ballot. You can request an absentee ballot. You can see when it was mailed. You can see when you got it back. So everyone listening, you should bookmark the myvote.wi.gov and use it. It's a great resource. And during the pandemic, it got a workout, and it served us well.
We'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Absolutely.
That's Dane County Clerk Scott McDonald helping us understand what it means when someone decides to investigate an election on their own and how county clerks deal with information and records requests. Now, as businesses reopen across Wisconsin, many workers who lost their jobs because of the pandemic find that rejoining the workforce isn't always easy. Bram Sable-Smith reports.
Karen Miller wants to work. That's something the 65-year-old wishes more politicians would acknowledge about the 150,000 people like her who lost work in Wisconsin during the pandemic.
We were working. That's what they forget. We were working. We all had jobs. You took them away.
Miller digitized government documents for data dimensions in Janesville before the pandemic shut that work down in March 2020. She's been looking for a new job ever since. A heart condition limits the type of work Miller can do. She'd prefer to work from home, or at least sit at a desk. But when she puts her criteria into work search websites like Indeed.com, she says she gets results for physically demanding warehouse or delivery work, or even nursing jobs she lacks credentials for.
They just throw crap at you and see if it'll stick.
Her search has yielded a few good leads and even some interviews, but it's yet to result in a new job. She suspects her age has something to do with it.
I'm willing to take an entry-level position, but they don't want to train somebody that's 65 years old.
Earlier in the pandemic, Wisconsin lawmakers championed the cause of suddenly jobless workers like Miller, even as Republicans and Democrats blamed each other for an unemployment insurance system that drowned beneath a flood of claims and argued over how to fix it. Miller herself waited 11 weeks for her first unemployment check. that forced her to spend down her life savings and tap into Social Security 5 years before she preferred, permanently reducing her monthly payment from the federal retirement program.
But I need to supplement that. It's not enough to live on.
But as vaccinations allow businesses to reopen, Republican lawmakers have called for an end to federal unemployment supplements that give people like Miller an extra $300 a week. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss called the program a disincentive to work that prompts, quote, mischief among the unemployed. Miller has noted the shift in attitude towards the jobless.
They think we're all just sitting around.
But economists are mixed on whether the federal supplements actually disincentivize rejoining the workforce. The Indeed.com hiring lab found job searches initially increase in states that plan to end supplemental benefits, but have quickly returned to normal, or even below average levels. Other research indicates federal stimulus checks and unemployment supplements helped large swaths of Americans stave off hunger, anxiety, and depression. That's if they could get it. In Milwaukee, Pierre Young is struggling to pay his rent while his jobless claim goes through a lengthy appeals process that could take months. The 51-year-old sold his two trucks to make rent, but now he does not have a car to get to job interviews or work sites.
But I gotta have a roof over my head, so I had no choice, you know.
Madison bartender Jamie McPeters is waiting for his unemployment aid to come after his account was used for attempted fraud. He's leaving his industry altogether to pursue a career in graphic design. He says he won't miss restaurant work, especially during the pandemic.
People just didn't care. Like, they never saw us as actual people, or like, we can get sick and die.
And Karen Miller continues her own work search.
At this point, I'd be willing to work for just about, you know, minimum wage even.
With her Social Security, she does not need a high-paying job, she says, just one she can do. Bram Sablesmith, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Coming up after the news, it's this week's edition of Food Friday. We'll hear about a contest looking for the best burger around and ask you for your favorites. You can get started on some Food Friday burger talk right now. Head over to the Ideas Network Facebook page with your question or your secret to a great burger with meat or without. And you can go to WPR.org/Food Friday for a couple of great recipes from one of our guests. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. Coming up Monday at 8 on The Morning Show, the new school year is just around the corner. Kate Archer-Kent welcomes school superintendents from around the state for a look at big issues facing districts, including funding, staffing, and how to run schools after the COVID year. That's Monday morning at 8 here on the Ideas Network. Now a contest is putting out the call for the best burger recipe in Wisconsin. The event, organized by the Madison-based Reap Food Group, is taking entries for the Burgers and Brews contest until August 8th, with winners being announced later that month. For this week's edition of Food Friday, we figure that's as good a reason as any to talk about making great burgers. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What is your favorite type of burger, your favorite condiment for them? What goes into your own personal recipe? Spices, cheese, type of meat? If you've made veggie burgers of some sort, how did it go? And you have a go-to burger, restaurant, or bar in the state? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Noah Bladorn is the Advanced Coordinator and Farm Fresh Atlas Manager for Reap Food Group. Noah, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
And Evan Daniels is owner and chef at Cadre Restaurant in Madison. He's one of the judges in this contest this year. Evan, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
All right, Noah, start off, please, by telling us about the competition, the burger contest that Reap Food Group is putting on. What's going on here?
Yeah, so Burgers and Brew is an annual event that we host at REAP as a fundraiser for work that we do as an organization. This year, we wanted to get a little creative with it. The idea around the event is always to connect consumers to producers in Wisconsin and showcase all of our great farmers, cheesemakers, brewers throughout the state, and let chefs like Evan do their magic with it. And this year, you know, COVID kind of presented an interesting challenge with us. So we wanted to bring it to the average local food lover. And we're kind of bringing that challenge back to you and offering you a chance to submit your own unique burger recipes along with a local beverage pairing and a chance to win $1,000.
So if I enter, I don't have to show up and cook you my burger. I just have to give you the blueprints. Is that right?
That's exactly right. Yep. Just send your recipe. There'll also be a form to submit a picture or video. And then from that, our judges will take it from there.
And before we turn to one of those judges, Noah, people think burger, they might think meat burger. Does it have to be, or it could be anything that meets the definition of burger?
Definitely. Yeah. Anything that meets the definition. So I always think Burgers and Brew is a great opportunity for people to get creative with it. Evan selected or he made a veggie burger for us, and you can see that on the website. And yeah, we get everything from lamb, pork, beef, to mushroom, to lentil burgers. So feel free to get creative with it. I think that's the most fun part of it.
All right, Evan, you've made a burger or two in your day. You're one of the judges here. What are you looking for? What inspires you when you're trying somebody's burger?
I think burgers are really, you know, interesting way to try to chase balance. So I think a good burger, you know, has to be moist, but not too moist, have a fair amount of acid and salt. I think people often overlook bread as an important component of a burger. Having a really good bun is really important. And I would get thrown out of the state of Wisconsin if I said the cheese didn't matter. So, you know, the burgers don't need to have cheese, but let's all admit it's better with cheese.
Now, Evan, I think of burgers as a vehicle maybe for condiments. I don't always think of them as a vehicle for creativity, though, when I'm cooking. Correct me, please, because obviously people get really creative with their burgers.
Absolutely. I mean, a hamburger sort of historically was essentially sausage between bread. So, you know, think about how varied the world of sausage is. There's no reason a hamburger can't be the same way. I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with a plain hamburger, because I think that's actually a pretty beautiful thing to have, like, really good ground beef and kind of just enjoy that flavor itself. But it's also fun to get creative with it, because the sky is really the limit. You know, that there's not a lot that's forbidden in the hamburger world. I mean, you've seen, you know, people who do donuts as buns and things like that. I'm never shocked when I see something crazy on a hamburger.
It's Food Friday. We're talking about hamburgers. A contest is on the way for a great burger. Noah Bladorn is with us with REAP Food Group. They are running this contest. Evan Daniels is one of the judges, owner and chef at Cadre Restaurant in Madison. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. When you have a burger, do you want it straightforward and simple, or do you like something a little more out there? What is your favorite burger you've ever had in Wisconsin or beyond? Do you have a go-to recipe or secret that you want to share with us? It won't be a secret anymore if you do. 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. Noah, how much creativity have you seen when you've had contests in the past? How much do you expect to see this time around?
So this is the first time we're actually running the contest. But I said, the event itself, we like Evan was saying, I think the most creative burger I did see was donuts for the buns. And that was a fan favorite that year. It runs the whole gambit at the event typically. You see the classic burger, but you get all the way to these chefs who are trying to stand out. And I think the same will come true as people submit their recipes for the contest.
All right, Evan, let's take a look at the classic beef patty. We could just shape some ground beef into a rough circle and cook it. But what kind of things can we do that will make it kind of a cut above?
Well, I mean, a big part of it is knowing the quality of the ground beef you're getting. A cheaper ground beef is typically a lot of just like ground round, which is like the leanest part of the animal mixed with fat from another part of the animal. And that's not as good as if you get something like ground chuck or ground sirloin, which are like kind of steak cuts. The marbling's more intermuscular, and so it'll have a lot more flavor, and it'll also have a more appealing texture. So that's one big component of it. And then on top of that, the fun thing about hamburgers is that little changes make big differences. And so some people like their hamburgers smashed so that it's a little bit drier, but they don't want to, they want to do it fast so it doesn't overcook. Other people like their burgers nice and big because they want a big juicy bite. Like there are so many variables that you can control to get to a flavor in place that you like.
And you also now shared a veggie burger recipe with us, Evan. Tell us a little bit about how this patty comes together.
So veggie burgers are interesting because I feel like most of the time when you go to a cookout that people are doing, like we have there are a lot of vegetarians in this world, and so you always want to provide veggie burgers, but most of the time people don't make their own. And it's mostly because I think they're intimidated by it, but they're really pretty simple to do. The example that we have on the website and the one that I'm going to talk about now tends to be more in the style of like a garden burger. I like my veggie burgers to not be meat analogs. I like them to be very veggie forward, because I feel like the whole like impossible meat sort of fake meat thing is a turn off to a lot of vegetarians. Plus, we're in the middle of the summer right now, so I want to show off veggies wherever I can. So, the base of the burger is lentils for protein, rice, brown rice, I prefer, specifically for the starch content and as a binder. And then you essentially boil those in a flavorful liquid, whatever kind of stock or broth that you want, and then fold in a lot of the kinds of vegetables that you'd like to see in the burger. I mean, if I was making a composed burger to that effect, I would probably want to repeat a lot of the flavors that I'm going to have in the condiments or the toppings inside of the burger. But the world is kind of your oyster inside of that. Veggie burgers can be even more diverse than regular hamburgers in a whole lot of ways.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Farida is with us in Viroqua. Farida, hi.
Hi.
What do you want to tell us about?
My favorite burger is quite different to what I find on menus here. I'm from New Zealand, and a New Zealand burger called a Kiwi burger would have a meat patty, a slice of tomato, some lettuce, fried or poached egg, a slice of cheese, a slice of pickled beet, and then ketchup or mayo.
So that all, Farida, sounds pretty familiar to me here, except the pickled beet, which I love on its own. What does the pickled beet do for you on that burger? I guess it's just like a pickle would be.
Well, we call it beetroot in New Zealand, and it's very popular, and it's good. Tastes good in a burger.
Farida, thank you so much for sharing that with us. And Noah, we grow a beet or two here in Wisconsin. That could fit pretty well. It came from New Zealand there, but it could fit pretty well in the local produce, right?
Totally. Something we're really looking for with these recipes is the story, and obviously the story of the sources that you're using, but also something like, you're from New Zealand and you came here and you have your own take on a burger. That's exactly what we're looking for. So definitely recommend submitting your favorite burger to this recipe contest.
All right, Farida, enter that Kiwi burger and good luck to you. It is Food
Yeah.
Friday. We're talking to Noah Bladorn from Reap Food Group and Chef Evan Danels from Cadre Restaurant in Madison, talking about burgers and a contest to find the best burger, especially one that uses maybe some local products along the way. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a favorite ingredient or condiment that has to go on your burger? Favorite bun, favorite kind of cheese, meat, veggie, cooking secret, you name it, or a question for our guests about some advice. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're picking up our Food Friday talk with Noah Bladorn from Reap Food Group and Chef Evan Danels from Cadre Restaurant in Madison, part of a statewide competition seeking entries for the best burger recipe. And we're talking about how to up our burger game. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go back to your calls now. Joel is with us in Kaukauna. Joel, hi.
It's not Joel, it's Joe.
Joe, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Joe.
Okay. My comment is what I live for is going to the firefighters' picnics. They have the best hamburgers.
Joe, how do you get invited? Because I've walked by fire stations when they're out grilling, and it smells awesome, but I don't want to just be like, hey, got one for me? How do you get yourself invited to a firefighter picnic?
No. These are public events.
Oh, public ones. Okay. I just walk by when they're cooking for themselves. That makes sense.
No. And then, because last year it was all canceled, and then I went to the first one, which was in Kellersville, Wisconsin. And like I said, it doesn't matter where you go. It's just the ambiance, and it's great.
Joe, thanks a lot for the call. Noah, maybe you'll get some good entries from firefighters around the state.
Hey, that's a new audience that we're going to have to reach out to.
Thanks a lot for calling in, Joe. Hey, we better talk about cheese a little bit. As you mentioned earlier, Noah, do you have a favorite cheese for your burgers?
You know, our staff, we just had a recipe contest and grill out this last Tuesday. And for me, what I did, I did a goat cheese from Dream Farm out in Cross Plains. And I thought that worked really well. I mixed it with a little honey and mustard. And I thought that added just a nice creaminess to that burger and something different.
And Evan, how, as a chef, do you work in different kinds of cheese to get the right kind of balance and mix?
Well, the kind of cheese that I like on a burger is usually, I try to have it be as complimentary to the ingredients as I can, but I also have a tendency to kind of fixate on things as I discover them. For instance, Landmark Creamery came out with a Taleggio this year that I got mildly obsessed with. And the flavor of that over a tomato with a burger would knock your socks off.
Taleggio, and I have not had that. Can you tell me a little more about that?
Taleggio is a cheese that's classically used in Italian food. It's a pretty pungent cheese. So it's not for the faint of heart. I think for people who are a little more familiar, it has a very similar texture and flavor profile to like a triple cream brie.
All right. That sounds great. Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Scott is with us in Milwaukee. Scott, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What'd you want to ask about, Scott?
Well, I guess my question is, I have discovered in various grocery stores where you can now obtain what is called a prime rib burger or the New York strip burger, and they are wonderful. And my question is, am I actually getting prime rib that is ground into this nice patty of the New York strip, or I maybe should be not paying that premium price for it? And what exactly am I getting in that burger?
Scott, thanks for the call. I'll throw that one at you, Evan. Have you seen this? They're serving prime rib burger meat or New York strip burger meat. Sounds like in pre-shaped patties at his grocery.
Yes. So traditionally that's made with the trim from when they butcher and portion the steaks. So, you know, steaks aren't going to be perfectly, like the whole subprimal that they cut the steaks out of won't be the perfect shape to produce a very specific amount of steaks. And grocery stores do a lot of volume, so there'll always be end pieces or pieces that don't meet their specifications specifically for a steak. And so oftentimes they'll grind those up and sell them as a more premium burger. As long as you trust, there isn't a lot of check and balance in that particular system. So as long as you trust your grocer and you think it's better, it probably is made out of the steak that they're claiming.
Thanks a lot for the call, Scott. And Noah, can you talk about the supply side of burger meat here in the state? I mean, we think of cheese a lot coming from Wisconsin. Do we have a lot of, you know, that kind of premium burger meat coming from Wisconsin?
Yeah. So a reason we throw this event is to showcase our Farm Fresh Atlas members. So Reap Food Group, we're an organization, a nonprofit based out of Madison, and our mission is to make good food grown well, accessible to all. And a part of that, we put together a publication for consumers to find local food sources that they can trust and who raise their food ethically. If you go to farmfreshatlas.org, you can, it's basically a search engine. And what you can do is you can type in whatever ingredient you're looking for, including beef, lamb, pork, whatever you want to put in your burger, and you can find all the local sources you need surrounding you.
Let's go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Richa is with us in Milwaukee. Richa, hi.
Hi.
What do you want to tell us about?
So I've been here in the U.S. from like the past 6 months, and I am really glad to hear on your show that the people are really talking about veggie burgers, because I couldn't find one in the past 6 months. So there's one recipe that I used to get back home, and I started preparing it right here in U.S. It's with cottage cheese. So basically, the patty would be cottage Indian cheese, which is then dipped into a batter filled with spices, and which is then coated with certain breadcrumbs or chips, flavored chips. It could be jalapenos, Mexican-style chips, anything. And that becomes the patty, and with mustard sauce and with the bun and separate veggies, whichever the people like, there's a burger. And it is a pretty good one, which I did not find one in U.S.
All right. Richa, thanks for sharing that with us. Maybe you can enter it into the contest, too. Evan, a cottage cheese, and I think I heard bulgur in there, and bread, like a lot of things going into this patty. Have you tried anything like that, or does that inspire you to try it yourself?
Absolutely not. That sounds pretty fantastic, though. I'm intrigued.
Thanks a lot for that call, Richa. And Evan, you gave us a veggie burger recipe. Again, it's online at WPR.org/Food Friday. And we can buy veggie burgers frozen at stores a lot. Some of them are pretty good. Can you make the case, though, to make our own?
Yes. I think you'll be shocked when you look at how inexpensive it is to manufacture your own veggie burgers. And then you also have the ability to have fresh ingredients put into it rather than ones that have been probably manufactured sometime before and stored in a freezer. They don't take very long to make. The recipe that we included probably takes 45 minutes from beginning to end, roughly, to do. And most of that is just things simmering in a pot. So, it's really not difficult to do, and you can always freeze them yourself and save them for later.
Thanks a lot for the call. Just our last couple of minutes, we've got another recipe, Noah, that you sent along to us, Stalzi's Spring Double Cheesy Burger. It's at WPR.org/Food Friday. Just in a few moments, can you tell us about this?
Yeah, so this is from Chef Joe Happy. He's the executive chef at ID at the Delafield Hotel in Delafield, Wisconsin. We worked together for a little bit a few years ago, and I went out to visit his restaurant and ordered the burger. This is what it is. So you can, if you go over to ID, you can buy this off the menu. As soon as I had a bite, I told him he needed to enter the contest. This is like the, butter burger from Culver's perfected. It is delicious. It's incredible. I would recommend going out to the website, checking it out. And if that's kind of your kind of thing, head over to ID in Delafield.
We will leave it there. Noah, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much, guys.
And Evan, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
I've been talking to Noah Bladorn, events coordinator for Reap Food Group, and Evan Daniels, owner and chef at Cadre Restaurant in Madison. They joined us for a Food Friday conversation about burgers and the Burgers and Brew Contest. You can find a couple of the recipes we talked about at WPR.org/Food Friday. And, of course, you can share your burgerly wisdom over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Tell us what to you makes a great burger, how you make it yourself. Coming up Monday on Central Time, there's a housing shortage in many communities. Some fingers have been pointed at big financial investors, but our guest says there's a lot more to the story than Wall Street. And some businesses, including travel companies, want to require proof of COVID vaccinations. Republicans in states around the country are working to block those requirements, saying it's a form of discrimination. We'll look at the debate over vaccine requirements. That and more coming up Monday here on Central Time. staying with our food theme for a minute, State Fair is coming up next month, and that means lots and lots of State Fair food. Of course, there will be cream puffs, and on top of that, the State Fair released a list of new foods showing up for the first time at the big event. There are more than 5 dozen new entries that push the boundaries of food and health. Here are some highlights. Buttery prime rib jerky on a stick. Blue ribbon chocolate bacon cookies. There's a bacon theme. Chicken bacon ranch cheese curd. Wait for it. Taco. Country fried steak on a stick. Cinnamon roll and bacon cheese curds. PB&J bacon dog. Yes, hot dog with peanut butter and jelly and bacon. Your scientists were so preoccupied with whether or not they could, they didn't stop to think if they should. Moving on, crawler crusted. I like crawlers. Crawler crusted chicken sandwich. Deep fried pineapple express. Didn't think we legalized yet. Deep fried Wisconsin fish fry. Yes, deep fried Wisconsin fish fry. Quote, all the traditional elements of a famous Wisconsin fish fry rolled together and deep fried. Triple C cookie dough on a stick. And Yak Mac Attack Burger, a Yak burger smothered in mac and cheese. Feel like I gained 5 pounds just reading that. Food news you may or may not want to use. This is Central Time.